Mars Megastorage, your state-of-the-art storage solution on the Central Coast. Mars Megastorage can store your RV, boat, car, household, or commercial items in your own fully enclosed unit or covered storage space. Our on-site amenities include security cameras throughout, gate access from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. with your own personal gate code, 17-foot high steel walls for extra security, fully paved, and a wash rack with professional pressure washer, buckets, brushes, and soap, as well as a dump station, all while providing our guests the highest quality of customer service. We encourage you to come see all the guest features we have to offer. At Mars Megastorage, we strive to give you the best possible storage experience at the best possible price. Big or small, we store it all. Mars Megastorage, 101 Wilsona Road in Paso Robles. Call us at 467-3200 or visit marsmega.com.
Lars Larson on KPRL, brought to you by Boyd's Tobacco and Elegant Gifts. Enjoy a handmade cigar in the lounge. 625 Spring Street. Must be 21 years of age or older.
Real Red Meat Radio.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly, provocative talk radio.
More than half the women in my cabinet, more than half the people in my cabinet, more than half the women in my administration are women.
Lars.
Never apologize for being patriotic.
Our beloved republic is in the hands of madmen.
No, here's your host.
My memory is so bad I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Tuesday and we're all looking forward to tonight's debate. And I say I'm looking forward to it. Maybe you're not. But I think it's going to be fantastic. I think Donald Trump is going to perform very, very well. And I think we're going to get word salad from Kamala Harris. And in fact, somebody just emailed me and said, I'm headed to the grocery store. What kind of dressing goes best with word salad? Yeah, well, in the case of Kamala Harris, I'm not sure what to suggest. Somebody's got a more clever idea than I do. But welcome to the Lars Larson Show. We call this the best conversation in talk journalism, and I think for good reason. And you're invited to that conversation. If you want to take part, it's 866-HEY-LARS. And if you happen to be a naysayer, we absolutely love naysayers. If you disagree with my point of view, I'm perfectly willing to put you up front, make your point, and stick around for a couple of questions. And so many questions that I would have for Kamala Harris were I one of the moderators. Now, they're not going to have somebody like me. They're going to have the folks from ABC who are going to do their best to make Kamala Harris look good, make Donald Trump look bad, and at the same time pretend that they are being independent third-party moderators who simply have no political agenda at all. But wouldn't you like to know? Where does Kamala Harris stand on, say, slicing the funding from ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement? She once advocated for that. Providing taxpayer-funded sex change operations? She was in favor of that. Banning fracking, banning gasoline-powered car sales by 2035, just a decade from now. Wouldn't you like to know where she stands there? And especially the border. I mean, as the former border czar, wouldn't you like to ask Kamala Harris, so you opened up the floodgates, 12 to 15 million people came into the country illegally. Was that good for America? And if so, how was it good for America? And should we just ignore the law? Because Kamala Harris has also said that she's in favor of decriminalizing illegal entry to the United States. But does she still stand for that? Or has she done a flip and a flop and a flip and a flop, and you have no idea where she's coming from? In fact, let me tell you one little interesting detail right now. For weeks, we've been asking, well, what are the policies that she would hope to put forward if she became, God forbid, president of the United States? Well, finally, yesterday, her campaign put on the website, they said, these are her policies. Now, most of them are very general, not specific at all, completely deniable. She calls it the new way forward. Except guess what? She cheated on her homework. I mean, I think the homework of any candidate for any office in the United States should be to, number one, understand the issues. Whether you're running for mayor or governor or the U.S. Senate or president of the United States, you should understand what are the issues that concern Americans most, like inflation, like the border, like getting involved in foreign wars and sending tens or hundreds of billions of dollars overseas. Those are the issues. Illegal aliens flooding into communities and committing murder and rape and other crimes, running down the resources of American communities to the point where even Democrats are upset about what's going on. How are you going to fix that? And if she doesn't have an answer, she does not deserve to be president of the United States. And on all of those issues that I've mentioned, Donald Trump has not only solid answers, but a record of performance as president. What does Kamala Harris have? She keeps talking about what she's going to do on day one. From day one, well, her day one happened back in January of 2021 when she took the oath of office as vice president of the United States. So what did her campaign team do? Did they sit down with the candidate and say, we want to find out where you stand on all these issues? No, it sounds like she actually copied them off Joe Biden's website. Now, how could I say such an outrageous thing? Well, according to the New Republic, the magazine, I know physical magazines are a thing of the past, but the New Republic used to be, during the Clinton era, it was referred to as the in-flight magazine of Air Force One, the president's plane, because the New Republic was completely and far to the left. So what did they find out? They took a look at Kamala Harris's website. Now, there's a thing called metadata. I'm an old fogey, but I know what metadata is. When I take a photo with my phone, the metadata that can be contained in a picture will tell you oftentimes whose phone was it taken on, where was it taken, what day was it taken. Tells you all kinds of data. The metadata that is on Harris's website now, if you look into the metadata, which is not visible until you look sort of behind the curtain, is urging voters to reelect Joe Biden. The language was visible when linked. This is what the New Republic says. Remember, they're a left-wing magazine. The language was visible when links to the campaign site were shared. And in the website's description on Google searches, guess what? Her campaign staff just copied wholesale off Joe Biden's website. She doesn't have any she doesn't have any policy positions of her own. She's simply making it up as she goes along. And when necessary, if you haven't done the homework, just like maybe in high school, you copied off somebody else, maybe somebody that you thought had been successful. And I don't know, maybe Kamala Harris thinks that Joe Biden's been successful. In any case, I want to get to your calls. 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And by the way, I'd love to have you vote in today's X poll. We put up a brand new question every single day. Today, well, we found out that one of the top executives in the United States Secret Service, you know, the agency that so colossally failed Donald Trump almost exactly 2 months ago, almost got him killed. Well, the assistant director of protective operations, and if you're thinking, he got fired, didn't he? Nope, he did not get fired. They have asked him to retire. In other words, we don't want to fire you. He probably richly deserves to be fired, but the Secret Service, if they fired him, would have to admit they screwed up. Instead, they say, why don't you just quietly retire and go away, take your federal pension that's a fat pension, and just go home. They don't want to fire anybody because in government, you don't, if you screw up so badly, you almost get President Donald Trump killed. Even in that instance, nobody ever gets fired. On that note, let's go to Steve. Hey, Steve, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Lars, you asked a question. Hi, my name's Steve from Salem, Oregon. You asked a question.
You know, when you use language like that, the producers tell you not to do that, and you do it anyway, then you're going to get dumped. I'm sorry about that, but that's the way it works. Let's go to Richard. Hey, Richard, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I love Donald Trump and his positions and his policies and everything, but there's a few things I'd like to hear out of him that I think could really benefit this country. And I think Donald Trump should use the left's
Richard?
And say, okay, oh, yes?
Yeah, you dropped out for a second. We should use the left to do what?
Trump should use the left's rhetoric against themselves and say, I'm going to start the largest carbon sequestering program in the United States, and we're going to plant more trees than we ever have before.
I love it.
And we're going to drop down, you know, and my whole plan would be drill, mill, and build.
That's a good one. I'm going to borrow that. Drill, mill, and build. Richard, that's a great idea. Coming up in just a moment, would you vote for world government? I wouldn't, but we're going to talk about it next.
paid for by Christian Care Ministry.
You know, a lot of times you have to choose between something high quality or something that saves you money. But if you could get both, why not? Especially when it comes to health care, and that is MediShare. You get both. Many families save $500 a month with MediShare, and that's huge. But it's also true that people wind up way more satisfied, too. The member satisfaction rate for MediShare is double that of the typical health insurance plan. Double. That's because MediShare works. It has for more than 30 years. It's a community of Christians who have shared more than $5 billion of each other's bills. People love having telehealth. They love the huge PPO network. So, yeah, really, you can save a ton and like it better. Imagine being happy with how you're taking care of your health care. So if you're self-employed or part of the gig economy, or you just want a plan you're happy with, you can call right now and get a price in 2 minutes. Here's the number. Just call 855-51-BIBLE. That's 855-51-BIBLE, 855-51-BIBLE.
President Trump says Newsmax is terrific. Mike Huckabee says he's tuning in like millions of Americans. Newsmax is now the fastest growing cable news channel in America. Watch Newsmax on cable, streaming, or on the free Newsmax app. And Newsmax has announced it plans to go IPO soon. For a limited time, eligible investors can even buy preferred shares in Newsmax, and they come with a 7% dividend. Get the details about Newsmax's planned IPO and shares. Just go to NewsmaxInvest.com. Forbes says Newsmax is a news powerhouse. Get Newsmax shares. You can even buy shares with a credit card at NewsmaxInvest.com. Whenever making an investment decision, you should consult your attorney or financial advisor. And investors are responsible for conducting their own due diligence regarding investments and for all tax and other risks and obligations. Don't miss out. Find out more at NewsmaxInvest.com today.
Mom, meet Sarah.
From first time Nana moments.
Yeah, welcome to Flight 101.
To annual girls trip moments. Your can't-miss moments are worth protecting against RSV. If you're 75 or older, or 60-plus with a chronic condition like asthma, COPD, heart disease, or severe diabetes, you're at higher risk of landing in the hospital from RSV. And there are no prescription RSV treatments. Check eligibility and schedule your RSV vaccine at VaxAssist.com.
So where should we go next?
Sponsored by Pfizer.
1 in 4 Americans have a disability. I'm one of them. I'm also a working mom who cares deeply about making sure every child with a disability thrives by getting their access needs met. We've got a trusted ally by our side. Easter Seals provides children and families the foundation for lifelong success through early learning programs, skills training, and prep for college and career. That's my Easter Seals. Make it yours. Join us at EasterSeals.com.
With all the changes in the auto industry these days, keeping up can be a challenge. So join me, Jimmy Purdy, on Gearhead Radio every Saturday at 9 a.m. I'm your go-to guy for all things automotive. Tune in as I share the latest advice and industry insights. Need help with your car? Call in and let's solve those car mysteries together. Here's the fun part. I'll share some of the hilarious mistakes I've made along the way, because let's face it, we've all got stories to tell. Gearhead Radio with me, Jimmy Purdy. It's not just a show, it's a community. Tune in this and every Saturday at 9 a.m.
When it comes to sustainable energy systems and service, Central Coast residents trust Solarponics. Barry from Cambria says, quote, Bill's presentation was great. He displayed an admirable depth of technical understanding of the system he was presenting. It was a pleasant experience. Thank you, Barry, for your Google review. When we install a sustainable energy system, we're installing 47 years of admirable displays of technical understanding. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Attention Central Coast homeowners, it's time to schedule your solar panel cleaning. Spring and summer are maximum solar energy production seasons. Dirty panels can decrease production by 20% or more. Make sure your panels produce the most energy and save you the most money. Visit solarponics.com to get your solar panel cleaning quote. While you're at it, ask us about battery backup and storage. Get more out of your solar energy system. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
The talk of North County, from Bradley to San Luis Obispo, San Miguel to Santa Margarita. This is where the North County comes to talk. KPRL.
Because you can't get enough Lars. Podcast every show at LarsLarson.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And as we anticipate tonight's presidential debate, the only one that Kamala Harris would actually deign to take part in. She has one that she has scheduled in October, but that's after millions of Americans will have already cast their ballots, making it kind of useless. She turned down the idea that Donald Trump had negotiated three different debates in September. She said yes to one and no to the other two. And even this one, she's still apparently carping about the rules. On that note, let's talk about world government and not U.S. government. I don't want to have one world government. I don't want WEF running things. I don't want WHO running even that piece of things. So I thought we'd talk with Frank Gaffney, the founder of the Center for Security Policy and the author of the best-selling book, The Indictment, Prosecuting the Chinese Communist Party and Its Friends for Crimes Against America, China, and the World. Frank, welcome back.
Thank you, Lars. And so, I'm with you. I don't want world government either, but it is hurtling down the tracks towards us. And I pray that there might be some mention of it before this election season is over, ideally starting tonight.
Well, in fact, wouldn't it be a great, you know, I've had a number of people, Frank, say to me, well, Trump has no formal, I mean, the debate does not apparently include any formal opportunity for the candidates to question each other. And I said, well, you don't have to let that hold you back. If Donald Trump is asked a question, and he says, I'm going to answer your question, but I want to ask this question of Kamala Harris. He could use every single answer as a way to pose a question to Kamala Harris. He could do it every single time he's asked a question if he chose, because I don't think she's got the answers. And if you said, I don't believe in one world government, I don't believe in WEF or WHO, what is your position, Kamala Harris? Americans would like to know. And I think that would resonate with a lot of Americans.
Well, not only would it resonate with a lot of Americans, but it would also be informing them about something they have no idea is underway, Lars, let alone how imminent it is. And if I could just take a minute to explain what I'm talking about. You and I have visited now for quite some time about, as you mentioned, what the World Health Organization has been up to in terms of giving its Director General, they've got all these fancy titles for these guys. They're all Marxists, it turns out. They're all basically tied into the Chinese Communist Party, by the way. But what they are doing at the moment in both of these institutions is creating essentially a form of dictatorship on the part of the folks who are running the World Health Organization, for one, the UN, for another. And what is of particular concern is that the rubric under this, under which this is being done, is saying, well, if there's an emergency that is of international concern or a global shock, well, clearly it has to be managed by somebody who isn't simply responsible for one nation. So what we want to do, you see, is we want somebody who has this kind of overarching portfolio or responsibility to run not only the recognition or the declaration of the emergency, but also what is to be done in response to it. And at that point, Lars, what you have is something that crushes our sovereignty.
Yep.
That, as we saw in the pandemic, COVID-19, that destroys our freedoms, that takes away our constitutional form of government, and instead sets up this arrangement that is completely unaccountable. It is without the limits that is baked into our form of government, let alone any kind of representation in the decision making that affects all of our lives. So you're right, the American people don't want any part of it. They just don't know that as of the 22nd, the 23rd of this month, another giant leap is going to be made at something called the Summit of the Future, where they plan to adopt something they call the Pact for the Future. And the idea of that pact is to at least put in motion, if not formally, finalized, put in motion a process that would give the Secretary General essentially dictatorial powers in the event that there's anything that he decides is an emergency. It could be climate change, it could be conflicts of various kinds, it could be supply chain disruptions, it could be cyber attacks, it could be an asteroid. Whatever he says is a crisis, is a global shock, complex global shock, if you please. He's supposed to tell us what it is and what we will do about it, and that would be the end of our kind of government. And I don't have any interest in it. Well, you don't have any interest, and I think most of your audience doesn't either.
No, and just to put a fine point, or, you know, carve a fine edge on this, imagine this, that if you have a crisis inside the United States, and either the state governments, like the pandemic, or the federal government says, we need to do X, and they take actions. Now, in the states, we saw during the pandemic, states that went wild with their authority. And I think they've suffered the consequences at the ballot box or at the polls. You know, because what happens is citizens say, you voted for that garbage, you wrecked our state, or you did damage, and you're not going to continue in your job. We have that power with our elected officials in this country. But if the UN or WHO or WEF or any other world agency says, we've just had a massive crisis somewhere, maybe it involves the United States directly, maybe not, and we're ordering the U.S. to divert a lot of resources from your country to this place that's having the emergency. And you say, I don't want that to happen. Who do I talk to? And you say, well, you don't have any representatives. You don't vote for the people who are making this decision. The U.S. Congress is subject to being told what the government is told what to do. And you don't have the ability to say that was a really dumb way, say, to run California during the pandemic under Gavin Newsom. So you don't have any ability to remove those people and say you don't get to be a member of Congress anymore because you voted for that garbage. You don't have that input, do you?
You absolutely do not. And that's really the point. The idea here, and something that I think everybody needs to reflect on, what you just described, Lars, isn't just some kind of hypothetical situation. It's what happened to us in COVID-19. And that was before they actually got the kinds of powers these characters are talking about. They were just able to make recommendations, but those recommendations were taken, in a lot of cases, as kind of an
orders.
Order, a prescription, yep. And particularly when Tony Fauci got into the mix, as you know. But my main point is this, that what we're looking at is the idea that global elites will tell us what we need to do. And they are the smart ones, and if you don't happen to like it, you absolutely will have no recourse. And not only that, but Lars, built into these various arrangements, the UN, the WHO, and so on, are not just these sort of dictatorial powers, as I say, they are also, unbelievably, mechanisms like digital IDs, which can conduce to sort of Chinese Communist Party social credit system, a tyranny, a surveillance, police state, if you will, and censorship arrangements that are required by these nations. And you know what it has to be censored? Well, misinformation and disinformation, which
whatever
it happens to be, whatever they say it is.
Yeah, and by the way, Frank, you and I both know there are plenty of American politicians who would do colossally stupid things, except they say, better not propose that. If I do, the voters won't like it, and they will retaliate at the polls, you know, on their ballot. And you know, right now, we're watching Kamala Harris abandon tons of her proposals from the last 5 years, saying, I'm no longer in charge or in favor of fracking or decriminalizing entry on the border or 100 other things.
Want a border wall, no less.
And I'm going to build a border wall. And you say, why is she doing that? Because she knows that will please the voters. If you have elites in other countries, on other continents, who say this is the way we're going to do it, and we don't have to give a damn what the American people think about it because they no longer have a government, we are their world government. And Frank, thank you for that warning. Coming up, your phone calls and your email.
Thing that we're doing tonight for the Milholland Mine, although we've called it a mine, it's really just what it has been is really a gravel quarry. Or a gravel pit for many years. So it's out on Santa Lucia Road. Some of you may be familiar with the location if you've driven by it. It's kind of visible from the edge of the road out there as you just after you pass over the bridge. It was about 1945 that this place actually was utilized for gravel excavation, and then it ultimately became a mine. And mines are regulated by the Department of Mines and Reclamation. It's a state-run agency that oversees that. So in 1980, right about the time city became a city here in Atascadero, the county actually separately approved a reclamation plan, and that was handed over to the city of Atascadero, and we sort of took that on. So the way mines work is the city actually acts as what they call a lead agency. So we're responsible for some oversight, we're responsible for annual reviews, we're responsible for the environmental process and all of those things. That's why we're involved, and that's why we're still involved today. It was about 1996 that we actually approved an amendment to the plan. Mr. Milholland wanted to continue doing some excavation and selling gravels from the site. And it actually was a use permit that we issued to do that. And it was about in 2011, the right to the mine actually expired, and the mine actually closed. The use permit actually expired, and I think the city declined renewing that use permit. And then it was about 2020 when the operator began some reclamation on the property. I actually met with Mr. Milholland out there on several occasions some years ago. Unfortunately, in November of 2020, he passed away. And some of the reclamation was done. A lot of it, actually, some trees were planted. A lot of the grasses were planted. But even since then, since the significant rains we've had, a lot of the site has naturalized already anyway, and they had done some grading to clean up the site and prevent erosion and some subsidence that was happening on the property. But it's very challenging to remediate and reclaim this site because naturally the area has gravelly soils, and that's why it was utilized in the first place. It doesn't have a big soil base. It has gravel on the surface. That's what made it attractive to mine. It was May of this year. The DMR came out and the city met out there, and we all did a walk of the site to look at how the site looks today. Is it reclaimed? Is it adequate? Have they done everything they need to do? And is the site safe? Is it not going to have a landslide erosion? So basically, they did decide that it is safe. It's not susceptible to landslide risk, and that the reclamation had been substantially completed, but they still wanted to see some more things done. Difficulty with that is there's no financing to do it because the money that was retained by the city to do that was done at a ratio that was adequate for about 1980. And here we are now. So it would allow us to essentially plant one tree, but 50 have already been planted out there. Anyway, I'm going to show you a couple of pictures. Here's 2005, when there was some activity on the site. And you can see the gravels being pulled out of the site and being trucked away. 2010, I think things had slowed down quite a bit. There was still a little bit of activity out there. And in 2024, it's actually pretty well revegetated, mostly grasses. It's not got the big shrubs and big trees on it. That's going to come in succession later on. But there were a number of trees planted out there recently, and they have taken hold. A lot of them have. And they should be naturalized and continue to establish on the site. So it's looking pretty darn good. So the additional thing that was put in place in about 1980 that was amended was this reclamation and closure plan. Several things that we've already checked off the list, as I mentioned, were stabilizing the disturbed slopes and regrading it. That's been completed. A little catch basin to capture runoff provided. Resoiling and hydroseeding the slopes with erosion control mix. That never really got completed, but the site has already naturalized itself anyway, and a lot of those things have already come into place. There was a number of trees planted, many of which have survived and are doing pretty well. So that's also been completed. And we've also monitored the revegetation and, you know, ensured that there's good coverage so that we've looked at the site over several years and believe it's adequate. So what we're asking the city council to do tonight is to formally close the Milholland mine. This is something that we assumed had been done in previous years, but we're actually just asking you to do that procedural thing of, and that's what the state's asking for, is that our council actually pass a resolution that says it's closed. And that's what this hearing's about. We're also saying that there's not enough money left over to do anything else on the property, but at the same time that staff feels that it's adequate given the conditions of the property out there today. And that we would like to work with the state and the existing family to officially close the site so that they can in the future use the site for something else consistent with our current zoning, which would be, is could you build a house? Yes, it is zoned residential. Now, I do want to point out a little bit of a, before I make this recommendation, a little bit of a misleading sentence that's in the staff report that alludes to a 10-year time frame in which they can move forward and utilize entitlements or do things on the property. What that really says, and it should have been described more clearly, is it's referring to when they made the original agreement, there was a thought that, hey, if the city went in and changed zoning, could we at least guarantee that for 10 years after we close the site, we can build something and do something consistent with the zoning that's in place at the time we close it? That's what that really says. So here's the reality, is the city's not going to, at least as far as we know, change the zoning on the property in the next 10 years. In fact, our current general plan draft shows it staying the same, which is RS, residential suburban, which means entitlement would continue on until the city decides to change it. For example, if we went in today and said, you know what, we're going to make this property open space because that's what's best suited for it, they would still have a 10-year entitlement to utilize it as a residential site based on the zoning that's in existence today. That's what that means. It's kind of like a development agreement in a way to say that, hey, we guarantee you can do that. That wasn't described so clearly in the report. It just kind of put that sentence, and it grabbed that sentence from the old agreement. So that's what that says there. Anyway, what I'd like to do is leave you with a recommendation tonight. It's a drop the draft resolution that's attached to report resolution A, determining that the Mill Holland Mine has been sufficiently reclaimed, remediated, and that authorizing staff to take the appropriate actions to complete the closure of the mine, which would cease any more excavation at the property in the future, which has already expired anyway. Happy to answer your questions.
Thank you, Director. I would first like to ask my colleagues if there is any ex parte on this item.
I did a site visit, but haven't talked with anyone.
No. Okay, so site visits, but no ex parte, meaning we haven't talked to anyone outside of this public meeting who is influencing our decision in this. That's required on all public hearings, not just this one. Okay, questions for staff?
You mentioned that the possibility of somebody wanting to build homes on this site, or I guess it's more than one property. I'm seeing some APN numbers. How suitable is it, considering this is a gravel pit, or for lack of a better word? About, I mean, how much extra work would have to go into the ground in order to put a building on it and ensure that it's stable? And would future owners, I imagine this is all part of the, what they call the deed, that they would learn about it, but that'd be my biggest concern.
Each year, I'm amazed at the locations that people build homes. But that's why we have a construction permit process, a precise plan process, and typically most properties require engineering and environmental work. So looking at that property today, I think it would be challenging, but that's why we hire a civil engineer, or they hire a civil engineer, and they produce construction plans, and they have to do grading, and they have to do revegetation, and they have to do location for a septic tank and leach field. There's a lot of work that has to go into that. So none of that has been investigated as to whether this site is suitable for building, but there are legal lots here. And whenever you have legal lots and someone has the financing to do all of that work, they can build a home. Now, they have to demonstrate to us that they can meet all those requirements of the California Building Code and engineer properly. None of that's been done. So can I tell you a house is guaranteed to be built here? No. Can I tell you the site is feasible for building? I can't tell you that because none of those investigations have been done. So I think you come to a good conclusion. Yeah, it is a gravelly site, but it's logical that someone could design a building site here and could get it engineered, certainly.
All right. Thank you, Bill.
Yes. Along those lines, I went out there and looked at it. I was a little confused from the maps. I was curious because on page 125 of our staff report, there's a map that shows five lots. Then on the very next page, on page 126, there's a map that's a little bit clearer that shows six lots. And then looking at the aerial view, and I should have made a closer note when I drove out there, but looking at an aerial view, you know, Google Maps on your phone, it looked like there's already houses on what are lot six and lot five on this. Are there, and then somewhere in the report, it talks about this mine being on three parcels. So it kind of relating to Councilmember Darris's question, if each of these lots, which are all in the four something but less than 5 acres, which I gather is the particular RS zoning out there, those are all independent lots and they all could have a house as long as they can meet the, you know, like you said, the building criteria in terms of prepping the site for a house.
Yes, making the assumption that they are legal lots, and we haven't done any records or deed research on that, then yes, each legal lot could have a house built on it. And there are a couple of lots on the other side of the slope down in the valley on the other side that were owned by the Milholland family that there are homes on today and that are not a part of this mine or gravel pit location that maybe on an older map showed as part of their holdings.
Okay. Yeah, I would just look. Yeah, like on the map on page 126, it appears to me there are houses on two of those lots already.
Yes,
they're listed here, you know, as if this is part of the mine in question. Okay, and then the second question is, I assume the heirs own the properties now. They could sell them individually with the caveat that a smart buyer would look into how buildable they are, or they could, build on them themselves once this is closed. No further restrictions from it being a mine other than they've got to meet the criteria for building.
Yes.
Okay. So we're not imposing it, doing anything. We're just saying, hey, the mine is closed. And the other question then is about the money. It appears that, you know, deposits were made, CDs were put aside, which I gather was for, in theory, for the city to access like a bond if the agreed upon work was not performed. It sounds like some of the work was either performed or de facto accomplished by nature. The money, is it still sitting there in the bank?
It's still sitting there. Jerry's got it right now below the desk. but
we know your cash handling is better.
Yeah, the money is a unique situation. We just want to give it back. Here's the reality. We'd like to just give it back. But the state, we've got to deal with the state and satisfy their needs. And the state's kind of telling us, no, don't give it back. You need to use it to finish any reclamation that may not have been done. And we think it's 98% done and use it to finish the 2%. So I could probably use it to go out and buy a bag of seed this winter and distribute it.
Well, I mean,
but there's not much. So
it's up to $17,000 or is it much, much less than that? My question is, do we need to take any particular action regarding that? Or is this action that I had to close the mine empower you staff to just give them
yes,
money back?
Yes, it empowers us to do what we need to do to satisfy the state's needs for closure. And we're trying to work through that.
Is that to say trying to figure out what else the state's going to want?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they want this resolution tonight.
But yeah, they want that. And we're hoping that they're going to be satisfied with us telling them that we're satisfied with the reclamation and remediation of the site and that we can give the funds back. That would be the best case scenario. That's what we're trying to do.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I have a few questions here. Did the responsibility or liability for reclaiming the mining site, does that rest with the owner who is now deceased or with the property? So does it pass to the new owners of that property?
That's an interesting question. I don't know the answer to that question, to be honest with you. It was recorded with the owner. One would assume that would be passed to the heirs. But as a responsible agency, our city is also responsible for overseeing that, but not for doing that. So that's an interesting question. I don't really know the answer to that question.
Okay. And I'll see if I'm looking over at the city attorney to see if he would like to weigh in on that. But that was sort of a follow on from questions that we had done earlier.
My suspicion is the obligation to clean up would run with the land as opposed to the individual. So the obligation to remediate will fall to the heirs of the property is my suspicion. That's based on environmental liability and other types of circumstances, like under the federal CERCLA Act, the responsibility for reclamation and cleanup of hazardous waste sites will run with the land. And so that's why people want to be very careful when they're purchasing former gas station sites and so on, because they can be held liable. I would imagine it's similar in this case.
Okay, so that I'll come back to why that might connect that at the end of my questions. and we could discuss what happens to the money. The trees that were planted, so part of the remediation to the original plan and that actually has been executed is to plant roughly 50 trees, right? Then those trees, as described in the staff report, aren't big enough to meet the criteria of the city's tree ordinance requiring trees to be, you have to get permission before you chop them down. If housing is built on the lots that Councilmember Bourbeau was delineating, is it possible that many or all of those trees might be then removed for somebody to do housing? And if that were, do we have any way to prevent that or to make sure that somebody plants some trees that can be grown and maintained even if they need to move some of them or redo that?
We actually have, even without the tree ordinance, there is procedures and policies in place that protect the trees that were planted and vegetation that was planted. And that's because of the fact that if you were to build a house in a location where these trees were planted, then you're building the house on some substantial slope, which triggers a CEQA review, which requires us to provide mitigation. And the mitigation, one would assume, would include preservation or replanting of trees. So that's how that would work in that scenario.
Okay, great. So we have a mechanism to cover that.
Yes.
Great. Okay. If we go to the to page 50 of the staff report, halfway down, there's a list of the things that it says, if the council makes any of the following findings, then the council shall determine that the operator is financially incapable. And one of those, this is what we have to do to make sure to get this thing closed. And one of them is just that there is sufficient evidence that the operator has physically abandoned the mining operation. And my question would be, in our language in the draft resolution, the whereas clause about this finding is saying that the family acting as the mine operator's representative has verbally communicated yada yada that they are financially incapable of completing the reclamation per the approved recommendation plan. Much of which is kind of moot anyway, because the good Lord has provided. Is there a reason, if there are issues about who has responsibility for legal responsibility for the reclamation, for completing the reclamation plan as originally outlined, and whether or not, and what kinds of assurances we might need to have, could we simply rely on the fact that the evidence that the operator has physically abandoned the mining operation? Because I think that's a really solid ground to stand on. It seems very clear that that's happened. Could that be done, and would that then avoid any confusion over whether or not the asset is sufficient, whether or not the asset of the land could be tapped to pay for the reclamation plan, whether it's needed or not.
So,
okay. So the question is, yes. Can we swap out that particular whereas clause in the resolution for a finding that there is sufficient evidence that the operator has physically abandoned the mining operation?
Certainly, if the council so chooses. And so you could just let us know which language. And I think that, yeah, it sounds appropriate.
And would that meet the needs of the findings then that the council has to make so that we can be, have over and done with this thing?
Yes.
Okay.
And I might suggest in addition to that, to bolster that, there's a provision on page 48 of the staff report under subsection C. The city council could make the finding that the operator is incapable of providing or fails to provide sufficient evidence of financial capability, and that it appears more likely than not that the operator cannot fully complete the reclamation. That would soften that a little bit, but it would still be the finding that the council could make to determine the financial capability of the operator.
Okay. Come back to that. I may need some help in capturing that language. I'm just looking for us to rest this on some ground that is objectively and easily proved and doesn't get into a big complicated thing with various family members and whatever in obligations.
I think you make a good point, but what I wondered about when I read this, and we say on the staff report on page 50, as you noted at the bottom, the site is naturalized, the site has been inactive, and the intent of the plan has been fully realized through naturalization. And to me, we're in these whereases that are in the resolution. Why don't we say, instead of speculating as to the financial capabilities of the family or not, that whole thing is about whether or not they have the ability to carry out the mitigation plan. Why don't we just say that the mitigation plan, the desired effects of the mitigation plan have largely been achieved. It's the mine is closed. They haven't mined on it in years. It's done. Instead of trying to address whether or not how much money the Milhonen family has sitting around or what the value of the property or whatever, and just say the mine has been closed and the mitigation plan has effectively been completed. And we as a city are willing to say that. And here's your money back. Now go make good use of the property somehow.
That's what we're trying to say.
Okay.
So looking over at our city attorney.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why that language is in there is there's very specific language in the code of the California Code of Regulations as to the criteria that the city council is supposed to use for determining financial capability. And that's tied to the release of the funding. So if the state doesn't see one of those findings in there, they may say, okay, well, that's not quite what we say. And the regulation says, the lead agency or board shall use but not be limited to the following criteria. So it just adds one layer of complexity in dealing with the state that we would have to show that something is a little different than the language that they're typically used to seeing in these.
But the language you're describing is all about saying whether they have money to fix the site, which to me is totally irrelevant if the site has been fixed.
Yes, largely has been fixed, but the state may have a different view of whether or not it's been completely fixed in conformity with the reclamation plan. So we're just trying to bridge that gap so that there's not something that the property owners would be left hanging out there for whatever the difference between the city council's determination of reclamation completion and the state's determination.
Okay. But as Mayor Pro Tem Funk noted, it is true that statement E on page 50 that they have physically abandoned the mining operation.
That is true.
Done so for many years. That is a true statement.
That is a true statement.
And so we could hang our hat on that she indicated.
Okay.
And I would ask Mr. Fleischman, would you say using one or the other is perfectly fine, or is it best to have two? And I suppose we'll hear from the family members if they have a concern one way or the other. But we certainly want this to be as strong as it can be for the state.
Right. And I think, you know, what staff is looking at is some layer, I would say, of protection for the family. So if you just state that there's sufficient evidence that the operators physically abandoned the mine, that may not close that logical gap for the state. Well, it may be out of business, but they haven't completed the reclamation. So if the council makes a determination that there is insufficient money to finish the reclamation plan as it was originally intended, that insulates the family from that issue.
That makes sense. Thank you, Mr. Fleischman. Hold on, Councilmember Darris. Mayor Pro Tem Funk, do you have more? You're good. Okay. You're good. Okay. All right. So I think we've gotten most gone through a lot of questions. My final question is, if we agree to this tonight, closure, we submit to the state, if things go according to best case scenario, what would the timeline look like? And when would the city have like final release of any responsibility or liability?
Don't know exactly that time frame. We would submit the resolution to them immediately upon getting a signed resolution. And we would schedule a meeting with them as we have done through Zoom and hope that there's a quick conclusion. I hope that they don't have to have a hearing on their end. They haven't been clear to us on that. I think this is the final piece as we know it. So we're hoping that once this is done, that's it. And we can assume that it is closed and everything's done.
Okay.
And that's how it's been clarified with us.
Okay, thank you. Is it necessary right now? Okay, Councilmember Darris.
So does the state actually come out and do a physical walkthrough and inspect the site the way, you know, our inspectors would do here? Or are they going to rely on what you're telling them that, hey, we think this is all good?
They've already done that inspection in May.
So they have, okay.
So they've done it, yeah. And they've made their findings and consensus, and now they're waiting for this.
Okay, so. Thank you.
They thought it was okay?
They thought it was, for the most part, okay. They saw the tree plantings, they saw the finished grading, they saw the revegetation. But what they said is, this is all great, but it's not 100% consistent with the original reclamation plan, which, by the way, was made many, many years ago, and things have changed. And so to be consistent with that original reclamation plan, we don't believe is prudent today. That's the issue.
All right. Maybe go to public comment. All right. I'm going to go ahead and open up to public comment. Are there any members of the public wishing to speak on this item? Please come forward. Zero? None? I'm seeing folks. No? All right. Folks, I thought we're going to speak or not speaking. That is just fine. So bringing this back to council, possibly what we would want to do based upon this most recent conversation we had is use both C and E in the whereas statements. Mr. Fleischman, is that what you would recommend based upon the conversation we've been having?
Yes. What I would suggest on E is just use the language after the word or. There's sufficient evidence because without going into Public Resources Code Section 2770H6, I think it's just simpler to focus on the fact that the mine has been physically abandoned.
Okay. So using C and E after the word or.
Correct.
Okay. And I would ask our city clerk, is that sufficient too? Okay. Mayor Pro Tem, would you like to make a motion?
I would be happy to make a motion that we adopt draft resolution A with the following amendment.